What we feed our pets is so important. It's why we talk about it so much, because it literally is the foundation of everything else we do for our pets. It is the foundation of their health, which is the foundation of their happiness, of their quality of life. And that is why I'm so excited for today's guest. If you're not familiar with Roxanne Stone, you certainly know some of the projects she has worked on in the pet food industry, most recently with Solutions Pet Products. She is an innovator. She is one of the best formulators for pet food we have today. And that's not me saying that. If you remember back to a live that I did with BC Henshin, I also posted it on all the podcast apps as well. He said that Roxanne is the best pet food formulator of our generation. And that's impressive. I can think of maybe three or four people that I would give that title to as the best. And I do include Roxanne in that because she is so passionate, so innovative, and so revolutionary in what she's doing. So today we're going to be talking to Roxanne Stone, who is currently working with Solutions Pet Products. And I'm so excited to have her on to have her explain so many different things to you about pet food, about the pet food industry, about formulating, about fermentation, one of my favorite topics. So let's get into today's episode with Roxanne. I just want to briefly, for those of you who are new here, thank you so much for being here. My name is Jessica. I'm your host. I'm also a certified canine nutritionist and certified holistic pet health coach, as well as a positive reinforcement dog trainer. So on this channel, we talk about everything: health, behavior, nutrition, all the things to make sure your dog or cat is living their best life. So without any more further ado, let's get into today's episode with the one and only Roxanne Stone. Roxanne, thank you so much for joining me today. I am thrilled that you are here. I'm like just gushing behind the scenes that you are able to join us and provide some knowledge and information to the listeners because, oh boy, like I said, I'm just like, I'm so excited that you're here. So, can you, for those people who may not be familiar with you yet or your work, which they may be more familiar with your work and just don't know the name behind it, would you mind just giving us a brief rundown of like who you are, what you do, what you've done, how people might know you?
Sure. First, thanks for having me on your podcast today. I'm super excited to be here and get to know you better, Jessica. I am currently the nutrition education director for Solutions Pet Products. They are a small raw pet food company based out of Littleton, Colorado. And I got my start, I guess you could say, in the pet food industry back in 2009. So my background is in human nutrition and food sciences. That's what my degree is in. I did graduate work at Utah State University, making cheese. So my graduate work was funded by the cheese pizza industry, actually. So mozzarella. So I always had a fascination with food and manufacturing of food and sort of the chemistry behind it, and that prompted me to go into my field of study. So I actually might try to keep it brief. My husband came down with cancer in 2003, 2004, and I was working at Jack in the Box at the time in research and development in San Diego, and was sort of disenfranchised a little bit with the conventional pet food, or sorry, the conventional food industry, and looking to with my husband Paul being sick, looking to just eat better, do better, looking more into organics, wanted to dive into more food as medicine. So I left Jack in the Box at that point, and we moved back to Utah, where my husband's from and where I went to school. And I started my own consulting business at that time. I went into food consulting, and I started just my own independent operation, and, you know, had different jobs here and there. And then we moved out to Orton, and it wasn't long after that that my sister Jacqueline called me, and she said, "Hey, Mom reminded me that you're a food scientist." I said, "You're not." That's how the conversation started. And she, I was like, "Oh, okay, yes, I am." And she said, "How do you feel about pet food?" And I, you know, was honest with her. I said, "Well, I never worked in pet food, but, you know, I work in manufacturing and food, and food is food. And I think it's really interesting." And you know, we talked about pet food in the past a little bit, because, like, she actually got her start with Nature's Variety. Jacqueline and I both found incredible love for animals all of our lives, and I always looked up to my big sister Jacqueline. She was always blazing a trail in the animal world. So she went to school for pre-vet, and but got married and had kids before she finished that. So she was a vet tech for 16 years. And she was introduced to raw pet food feeding pretty early on, working for some innovative and holistic vets. And she was the one that actually introduced me to raw milk. And because I came out pretty conventional from school, you know, better eating through chemistry, and, you know, how do we do this? How do we get more shelf lives? How do we, you know, how do we make it cheaper? How do we put more water in it? Those types of things. Not, you know, what is it? How nutritionally dense is it? Or, you know, how is it contributing to our health? That was way at the bottom of the list on most of the projects that I worked on. So, like I said, so with my husband having cancer, and, you know, he got into full remission and is doing great, that prompts you to look a little bit further into your own health, the health of your family, what you're eating. And so we went down that road. And so it was very serendipitous when Jacqueline called, because like I said, we had started that journey already. And she says, "Yeah, I think I want to start my own pet food company. And I need a food scientist. I need somebody who can do, you know, quality control and purchasing, and help me set this up." So it intrigued me. And then we started working together, and it just, we didn't realize we were 8 years apart. And so, you know, we kind of grew up with a little bit of a generation gap. And when we put our heads together, everything just kind of exploded. Like, we were like, wow, you know, this, we just kind of prompted each other to really look into the science, the research, and we fed off of each other very well. And so with the two of our heads together, we came up with some great ideas for pet food and introducing different pet foods to the industry. So Ailsa's Pet Food was born in late 2009, early 2010, and was the first to introduce basically fermented pet food. And that was, you know, that was something that we evolved into, and I think is, you know, we're really great. Unfortunately, due to circumstances out of our control, Jacqueline and I have had to leave Answers. And then we helped the Catmers, who produced a lot of the goat milk, helped them put together cured pet food. And unfortunately, that was sidelined through some legal difficulties. And so it didn't last very long. So to the rescue, I guess, or just Chelsea and her team, put together solutions pet products and wanted to make sure the products that worked so well for her and her clients were something that she still had access to. So she basically developed her own pet food company. And then she hired us and hired me. And unfortunately, Jacqueline passed away in September of 2022. Or she'd be here with me today. And so, and I hope it's okay, Jessica, if I take this opportunity on your platform, just as a side note, talking about Jacqueline, I just want to state for the record on your show today that Jacqueline did not commit suicide. There was some rumors that she may have or in the field, and I just wanted to clear up that confusion and any misinformation that people may have received that she did not. She actually died due to complications from COVID.
I was so sorry to hear that, and I obviously didn't know either of you at that time, and so I you know wasn't involved in anything, but I just her impact in the world, I'm sure you're aware of it, but it's always nice to get those reminders that she really did have a big ripple effect throughout the world.
I would like to take the opportunity as well to thank the entire Girl Pet Food community and feeding community, because we got so much outpouring from everyone stating their individual connections to Jacqueline and how they knew her and how she helped with their dog and helped introduce them to raw pet food or introduce them to raw milk. And that was so wonderful to hear all that and so supporting. So thank you to the raw pet food community who's listening, from me and my family. That was amazing, the degree of support that we got and still continue to get to this day. So that launched me into the pet food industry, kind of from the human food industry, and was able to learn a lot. I early on and started attending the AFCO meetings, and that's eye-opening to say the least, because I have to say the pet food industry operates very differently from the human food industry on many levels, and one of those I'll point out is that a lot of people don't realize that pet food manufacturers have to register their pet food in each state that they sell pet food in. Very different from human food. You don't have to go through those provisions for getting your human food on the market. And as a result of that, it's sometimes difficult, but I know that we'll probably talk about that. I digress from how I got started in pet food, but so that's my sister drug me into this, and I appreciate her for it, because it's been extremely satisfying, and her passion was contagious, and she definitely gave me the passion for this, for not only for pets and her companion animals, but for learning about farming and regenerative farming and bringing that to the table as well.
Yes, it is such a big deal, and like I said, she there is such a ripple effect from her and you as well. And I do also want to say that I'm really happy to hear that your husband is in remission. That's, you know, obviously devastating news that nobody wants. But you know, we always look back, and I think if we can look back and see that things happen for a reason and leads us down these paths, like. There's like some solace in that. And, so yeah, it sounds like you can kind of see that progression. So with Solutions and Chelsea, first off, I want to say that I was recently, speaking with BC Hinchin, and he said something to me that I want you to know in case you don't already know it. He said that you are probably the best pet food formulator of our generation. And I just... and of course he says that, and I'm like, oh, more pressure.
He's a dear friend, and we attended many of the AFCO meetings together. I got to know him and his wife, Kathy, incredible pioneers in the pet food industry themselves. It was sad to see that they, when they didn't retire from their store, but I know they're still very much involved. I think BC might be doing a podcast as well. And so that's very lovely of him to say, and so appreciative, right? I really do consider him a very dear friend, and definitely has with what he, the articles you wrote for the Pet Food Magazine you wrote for, just contributed a lot. He and still does. So.
Yeah, absolutely. And I bring that up because, you know, the way we see my generation, probably your generation, we're not that far apart in age, I don't think, but like the way pretty much all of society right now, at least, you know, in developed countries, see pet food, you know, we have been marketed to for so many decades that many people, most people, and even me, you know, 15 years ago, I was very much under this, you know, whatever is in this bag or this can, if I don't feed this, then I'm going to be killing my pet. Like, this is exactly what my pet needs. And so to have people that we call pioneers that are, you know, pet food formulators, we can look to who are making change in the pet food industry. You know, more and more people, I think every day, are just waking up to the idea that, oh, what's on the shelf in the grocery store isn't necessarily the best thing I could be feeding my pet. And so to have people like you who are kind of pushing the boundaries of what it means to feed our pets, mm-hmm. For not just to survive, but to actually thrive, is a newer thing in the, like you were saying, since, did you say 2009, 2010, when Answers was created? It's relatively new for us, a new idea for us in our society. But one that is so important, especially as we're seeing more and more disease in our pets and humans, and to how our diet has changed through the generations, and how, you know, our pets' diets have changed through the generations, and this direct correlation to what we're feeding, and then the, you know, the effect it's having on our health. So with that in mind, you know, having a brand like Solutions, what's kind of the founding principle behind that, I guess, is what I'm getting at.
Yeah, sir. No, your question. And let me just say that Chelsea's amazing, and her team at HeroStats. Chelsea's been doing this a long time as well. I'm pretty sure she opened HeroStats in 2007. And she has incredible intuition on the health and well-being of animals, and being able to read that and understand the science and the data. And she's done an incredible job at summarizing and putting that together to help her own clients and pet parents understand what they're seeing. And so, you know, Solutions was born, and this is in my opinion, and, you know, for that reason, to be that resource. So not only offering a product to these pet parents that is going to be advantageous to the health of their pet, but offering the whole package, in other words, the education behind it, the principles behind it, the data, the research, all of that combined as to why we choose what we're choosing as far as ingredients and sourcing and supply in this pet food. So it really is, Solutions is really a package deal. It's not just going to the store and pulling a product off the shelf. It's being able to tap into a lot of experienced people who, A, have the passion to want to do best and continue to evolve to do better, and B, the experience and knowledge as well, that history, to be able to help the pet parents feel confident in the changes or transitions that they're making for their pet.
Well, that is so important. The education piece is missing. It's been marketing for so long. How can we market this product better so that the consumer purchases it to feed to their pet or to supplement to their pet? Right. And so that like mindset shift from, okay, this has really wonderful marketing, but this education over here is telling me like why this was put together the way it was put together and how it's beneficial to me or my pet. And that I think, or, you know, just as like a human living today, we're like, we have more access to information than ever before, but also less understanding of how to actually get to real information to educate ourselves than ever before. And so I appreciate that about the brand, about the company. And I know, you know, Chelsea's been doing so many things over the years, and Solutions is just one of the newer pieces of the puzzle. Yeah. And I want to talk more about the products that Solutions has. But before we do that, you mentioned a little bit earlier a couple of little things about AFCO, and I want to talk a little bit about being a small brand in a space that is huge. I mean, literal billions of dollars every year, and these companies like, because it's on the top of everybody's head right now, like Purina, who's owned by Nestle, who's actually owned by like all these like conglomerate, what are they even called? The companies that are just, you know, that buy and sell and have stock and all these different, like there's, it's really, if you get into the weeds of who owns who, you kind of dwindle everything down to like, you know, Vanguard and BlackRock. I mean, literal billions and billions of dollars. And then it's such a big undertaking. Like, it's, to me, it's bravery to create a little, you know, a little space for yourself in such a big arena. And so what, when you talked about AFCO earlier, and I've had, and I know he's been a big part of your and your sister's lives as well. Billy's a really good friend, has been on the podcast many times, and he's talked about AFCO and kind of like the insidious nature of what the pet food industry actually is and what AFCO is actually there for. And it's not to figure out the best interest for your pet, but to figure out, really breaking it down the way I understand it, is like, how can we best utilize waste from the human food industry and get that into, you know, to get it out of, you know, dumping it, let's put it in our pets. That's kind of what it seems like it boils down to. How do you see that?
I think you hit the nail on the head there, Jessica. That sums it up really well. Is it really is, unfortunately, I don't think it started that way, but, you know, AFCO's over 100 years old, if people are learning that. I think it started back in like 1908. And I don't think it started with that intention, but unfortunately, it's evolved into exactly that. Let's away the landfill and figure out how we can use all the so-called byproducts from manufacturing, you know, whether it's manufacturing of food, even manufacturing of biodiesel fuels. Unfortunately, those byproducts are now making their way into pet food and pet food ingredients, because they don't, they can put a dollar on them. If they can show any kind of AKA nutritional value in a product, whether it's, you know, just basically saying protein's in there, but, you know, it could be very damaged, decimated protein, oxidized fats. As long as they can say this is providing calories and with some degree of nutrition in it, then they can rework that product, recycle it, upcycle it, or however you want to, you know, classify it. But it really is not species appropriate pet food. Should not end up in it, or cattle or livestock feed for that matter. And yeah. Even if it doesn't make it directly into as a pet food ingredient, it indirectly makes its way into pet food because it ends up in either poultry or cattle, you know, feed that comes into that. And so it is disheartening, but it's sort of the reason why I go. And why I know that Jacqueline and I always felt it was important, and Chelsea, I believe, feels the same way, is that it's the arena that we have to operate in, right? And like you're saying, it's really designed for the big pet food companies, big iron, big pet food. And, you know, when you're at these meetings, it's the writing's on the wall. It's very clear to see the root. You know, the scientists and the group that's from the FDA, CVM. So CVM is the Center for Veterinary Medicine. So you have these regulatory folks that are in the FDA, CVM that attend AFPEL. And then you have your industry representatives, right? And so that would be like your, you know, the NRA, the National Renders Association, or SENS people. Well, rendering is a form of basically taking waste and reinventing it through heating it to, you know, utmost degrees that you can to rework it and make it usable again into some kind of usable ingredient. You have people like the Brain Association, the National Brain Association that goes in, obviously they represent the big guy, Archer Daniels Midland, Monsanto, which is now Bayer, you know, the big soy and corn growers that put the, you know, that do all the high fructose corn syrup and lecithin, and that's in every single ultra processed food that you can, you know, find on the shelf. So yeah, it's serious money, it's serious lobbying. And these big representatives from these organizations like the Pet Food Institute, PFI, sit at the table. But there is hope, and I will let you know, I don't think a lot of folks know about it. So for us small manufacturers, us little guys, there is an association that was formed. A very brave woman by the name of Dr. Kathy Alanovi stepped up to the plate for us small manufacturers and put together Next Generation Pet Food Manufacturers Association. Call it Next Gen. And that's been in play now, I want to say, at least 5 to 6 years. And she got us a seat at the table. Kudos to her at AFCO. Yep. So now we have some representation when we were just basically going as observers in the past, attending these meetings. Now we have Dr. Kathy that sits as an at the table as our representative for not only raw food manufacturers, but any fresh food, small food, pet food manufacturers that are doing using, you know, human grade ingredients, you know, not Kindle manufacturers. These are, you know, the small ones that you'll see in the independent pet supply stores. So that's good news, and that developed out of a group of us, and VCU was in that group, and Susan Thixton's in that group, and of course Chelsea, myself, and you know Billy would attend, and these are small pet food manufacturers that have a real concern for where pet food is going in general, and like I said, it's sort of the arena that we've been given to operate in. We have to manage it as best we could, but we feel that there's serious change that does need to happen, for the pet food industry in general to get better. And we want to see the whole pet food industry get better because that only helps every pet, right? You know, so, although, you know, that pie in the sky, and I think we're a long ways from converting a lot of these big corporate giants to make better food, but we're there at the table and we're speaking up, and that's a good thing. So really happy and excited to be part of the next gen. If there's any other small manufacturers out there listening, check it out at ngpmfa.org.
Awesome. Yeah, I'll make sure to put that in the show notes as well. That is really good news. And it does feel like a us versus them situation. And trying to bridge that gap is important, with also without, you know, losing your morals and ethics and what you're doing and why you're doing it. And so hopefully there can be something that, you know, progress made.
Right.
The one thing that I was curious about your take on, because I have multiple people who have brought this up to me in the past, and it does, just from a lay person such as myself, it seems very like the standards are very unfair, for a lack of a better word. The standards that guidelines that AFCO provides, that the states then use as regulation. And I like to try to be as specific as possible when I'm talking about that, because it's a very confusing world that the standards are for kibble manufacturers. So when you are producing a fresh food product, like Solutions does, like some of, you know, the other companies you've mentioned, some of the smaller manufacturers, it can be really difficult, not impossible, but difficult to meet those guidelines with fresh food, especially considering sources of foods and how animals are raised today, and the, you know, the nutrient values that, you know, a cow had 200 years ago isn't the same nutrient values that they have today, and blah, 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 all the things. Do you think, or is it, I don't want to say like, just, it's not fair. It's not fair. I don't think it's fair, but is there any hope, any way around that? Any change that you see? I think it might be more difficult to try to get the population to understand that AFCO balance, complete and balanced, isn't what you're looking for on a fresh food product, because it's what they know and it's all they know. But at the same time, you could, I think, and tell me if I'm wrong, you could feed your pet with fresh food and it not be AFCO complete and balanced, and they can still thrive.
Yes.
Potentially, possibly.
No, I think you summed that up pretty well, Jessica. And it is confusing. And without going into a full-blown chemistry lesson and laboratory analysis lesson, I'll try to sum it up and keep it brief. But so just to start out, a lot of people are confused on what AFCO even is. And they operate in, for lack of a better term, sort of this suspicious area of regulatory that kind of protects them, because if you would ask, AFCO doesn't regulate pet food, okay, and in the sense that they're gonna, like, you know, slap an injunction or a fine on you like the FDA. So FDA is the regulatory body over pet food per se. AFCO is a organization that includes FDA individuals, includes agriculture, Department of Ag officials from each state, includes some veterinarians, of course, industry representatives. So it's this consortium of a lot of different folk that all have influence in the pet food arena, that basically get together and write definitions and rules and regulations that each of the individual states then can choose to adopt or not. Okay, so it's really up to the individual states on a state-by-statewide basis. And most of them do adopt it. It's just easier for them to adopt what they call the AFTO official publication. The OPU is what they call it. And each year they write a new or updated official publication, and it may include new definitions. And so with each pass, so there's two meetings every year that happened and talked about the lobbyists that go and you know, our industry goes now with Next Gen. And so we're lobbyists ourselves trying to, you know, lobby for our agenda for the raw pet food agenda and small and fresh pet foods. But yeah, standards were written a long time ago now. And it's actually based on an organization called the National Research Council. And you can look up the National Research Council. And again, they're a board of experts that get together and advise and publish based on data and research different standards for different things in industry. In particular, this one is nutrient requirements for cats and dogs. The last NRC that was published on that was 2006. So the most updated one we have is 2000. But the data goes back as far as the 40s and 50s that they use as far as what they're leaning on to make their standards and their you know, their recommendations for what minimum requirements of nutrients are. And the reason I'm going into the history of this, I know it's a little bit blind, but because I want your audience to understand where this data is coming from, okay, that we are all held to now, whether we're kibble, cooked, fresh, canned, raw, we're all held to this standard of nutrients, right, for the basic nutrients. Guys, and most of your listeners probably think, well, that's a good thing, and it is a good thing that we're not just willy-nilly, you know, anything goes out there, and that there is research and some data that was collected that does show, you know, the requirements that these animals need to get by and to live. And most of your reader or listeners are probably too young to remember the whole taurine debacle. I think that was even, you know, back in the 80s maybe, and that they realized that if they weren't going to use fresh food, which taurine is naturally in a lot of meat and organs, heart, muscle, liver. So if you're feeding a cat fresh food that contains any kind of meat, they're getting taurine. But because of the processing and pet food and so many, you know, how it's processed so much and such little meat makes its way into pet food, they actually found out that, you know, cats couldn't synthesize taurine like dogs can, and they needed to add it. If they weren't going to have enough fresh meat and organs in there, then they needed to add synthetic taurine. And, you know, unfortunately, that was discovered by, you know, cats getting really sick and dying and with heart problems and all kinds of things. So we don't want to have to go through that, right, where we find out after the fact that dogs and cats are deficient or getting ill because we missed something in our food. But unfortunately, that's a byproduct of processing, right? So if we go back and just use our common sense on general observation of what these animals are and what
you're finding it common sense, right?
What the counterparts are, the wild counterparts are eating in the wild, right? If we just step out of our little laboratory for 5 minutes and go into nature and observe what a wild cat and a wild dog would be eating, we can see that they are surviving and thriving in a lot of areas on, you know, what Mother Nature has provided. And what Mother Nature is providing them is, you know, wild prey, they're scavenging, they're, you know, and nobody's adding synthetic taurine to their diet, and nobody's adding copper and zinc and other mineral. You know, they are foraging and they are also scavenging, but mostly, you know, as carnivores, they're catching prey. And that's providing everything that they need. So we have to remember that, right? That, you know, we have come a long way in the science of nutrition, but we still have a long way to go in really understanding. And so when, in my opinion, as a food scientist and somebody who has been through food analysis classes, actually, I worked in a food analysis lab, set it up. I understand also the limitations of testing food. So a lot of people don't understand, even in ultra processed foods and synthetic foods, when you are able to standardize something, it's still very difficult and you're still dealing with food that's going to have variation. Now, when you go back and you do this in real food, when I say real food, you know, non-synthetic food, but food that is provided in its whole natural form. A beef heart, for instance, because that's one of the ingredients we use, right? So you take a beef heart and you can test that beef heart from, you know, one set of, you know, a cow over here, and, you know, and it's going to give you a range of, you know, amino acids and, of course, the protein and, you know, the B vitamins, you know, your fat-soluble vitamins. You're going to get this weight, right? You're going to test another beef heart over here that you took from this rant, and it's going to give you another rate. But nonetheless, the basic ingredients for the basic nutrients, they're there, but they are going to vary. Mm-hmm. So when AFCO puts together this nutrient profile, it says roughly 20 milligrams of zinc per kilogram, and you need 2.5 mg of copper per kilogram, and these are the minimums. You have to remember that this data that they're pulling from is from laboratory analysis on isolated, fractionated, very purified ingredients and food. Okay, so when I say that fractionated, isolated, that means this is food that was put together in a lab or in a manufacturing facility that was very specific, probably not all whole foods. There might have been some real, you know, real lean ingredients and things like that in there. But for the most part, you know, a lot of synthetics and things like that. And then they would test them, you know, on these animals. So it's still very limited information in so much that if you want to feed your pet non-processed food, whole food ingredients that are whole from these animals, like a beef liver or like a raw meaty bone or a whole sardine, you know, you can't standardize those foods. So the best I can sit here and tell you as a food chemist and a nutritionist, I can say, you know, Jessica, I know there's plenty of data that shows sardines are great rip-off, you know, resource for your vitamin A, your vitamin D, and your omegas. We know every sardine is going to have some omega-3 fatty acid, you know, some more than other, but it's going to be in there. If you give your dog a sardine, you aren't providing omega-3 fatty acid. Can I tell you how much in each sardine every time? No. I can't, but I can tell you it's going to be a good source and it's going to be a good clean source of it. I can tell you there's going to be vitamin D in there. Can I tell you, Jessica, that you're going to get 500 IUs, international units, okay, per kilogram in every two sardines that you feed your dog? I can't, but I can assure you that every time it is going to provide vitamin D for your dog. So you see where we're going with this. So when you are held to a standard that of minimum, you know, requirements. And they do say these are minimums. So, you know, they expect you to say, you know, you got to hit these minimums. And I'm not saying throw the baby out with the bathwater here. This is all good information that has evolved over the years, and it gives us a good baseline. And I will say, as somebody who has done laboratory analysis and understands a lot of methodologies on our capabilities for measuring these, the macronutrients are going to be pretty accurate. And when I say macronutrients, that's your protein, that's your fat, your moisture, your ash. We do have methodologies and laboratory instruments that are pretty keen on getting that pretty close, in my opinion. The further you get down and you try to get to actual amino acid content, actual micronutrients, trace elements, that are very, very small in there and also very dependent on other minerals that they would either interact with or chelate with. You got to remember, when you go to measure these things in a laboratory, you have to isolate them first to measure them. And when you do that, there is a lot of assumptions and limitations that you have to assume in your methodology that are going to happen, that are never going to give you 100% accuracy. So it is an estimate. You can get, you know, you can try to get close, but it's not perfect. So when you're taking fresh food and you're basically saying, you know, jam this square peg into this round hole and make it work, you know, it's not going to all the time. So getting back to your, you know, can we as fresh food manufacturers offer a complete and balanced diet that's not going to actually fit into that AFPM nutrient profile every single time? In my professional opinion, the answer is yes, we can get complete and balanced for these animals. Or, you know, within this variation that as you eat over time, it is not going to create deficiencies or toxicities, right? But in that one standardized, you know, profile that's sitting in the AFCO OP, you know, there's many times you're going to deviate from that. And so then you're, you know, you're, because you're not using premixed vitamins, you're not using these synthetic vitamins, you can't standardize. And when you can't standardize, you can't guarantee. Okay. And so we have to list these guaranteed analysis. Now, the macronutrients, I will admit, like I said, are pretty, you can get really close on this. So I know when I formulate or, you know, a diet that you're, if you want, you know, 14% protein and you want that your minimum, you know, you can formulate to get to 14% minimum protein. However, if you want to get, for instance, to, you know, 200 parts per million of manganese, you know, that's going to be a little bit trickier when you're not using synthetic, when you're depending on, you know, I'm going to throw in some of this for my manganese or some of that. And so that's where it does work against the small food and fresh food, whole food manufacturer. When you work with profiles like that. So they do give you an alternative, and I'll go into that. And the alternative is to do a feeding trial. I said, okay, if you're not hitting these nutrient profiles in AFCO, well, we'll give you another way on your label to say this is complete and balanced. And we offer a protocol for a feeding trial. Now, if you want to use the typical captive dog laboratory analysis, which is, I believe, in Nebraska. There's a beagle colony lab that does most of the feeding trials for the big guys. It's $25,000. Not something I want to support because these beagles are in captivity. They don't get out much. They are kept in kennels pretty much all their lives and then used for these types of feeding trials. So you can go and hire a professional laboratory that has, these beagle colonies, which most of us that are in the small pet food manufacturing world really don't want to get behind. So then that leaves you with sort of the informal trials that we kind of have to depend on volunteers and maybe a trusted breeder that you may know to. So it's eight dogs that you have to start with, eight in the control group, eight in your test group. It's 26 weeks, which is 6 months. I think you should actually go a year. I don't even think 6 months is long enough to really understand the complete diet, you know, for the dogs, that they wouldn't be getting deficiencies or things wouldn't be creeping up. But it is 6 months, and two dogs can drop out from each group. So you got to end up with six finishing in each group. And it's very basic measurements that they require. And that's another way that you can prove that, you know, you're hitting everything you need to hit. But because of such an expense, we're looking at, you know, $20,000 to $30,000 to really carry out something like that. Unfortunately, a lot of these small pet food manufacturers just don't have that kind of research dollar to upfront to do that right away.
Right.
Yeah. So
with solutions, how do they fit in? How does, because it is a fresh food company.
Yes. Yes. So, Chelsea uses a software product called the Animal Diet Formulator, and it's a really keen piece of software. Steve Brown, Susan Recker, and Barbara Royale are the geniuses behind that. And it's a really good tool because Steve Brown is a pioneer in raw food feeding. He's been around forever, great guy. And he's collected a lot of data over the years. He's a data person too, loves to analyze the data, loves to collect that. And so he's put together a very useful software program. You can purchase it as an individual too. You don't have to be a manufacturer. If you're a DIYer and you want a good base to work off to see that you're hitting your numbers, look at the Animal Diet Formulator. So that's what we use. It's a great way to know that, again, these are estimates. This is, the best you can get. But we are hitting our numbers with fresh foods. Dialed in to the point where we're hitting the numbers with fresh food. And, it's not easy. It's expensive. We use the top quality, top of the top in the supply chain to reach those numbers. And, it does, but you do get what you pay for in that situation. And we are able to do a completely 100% raw food diet with whole, fresh, fermented ingredients. And fermentation helps in getting those numbers because those little bacteria work on the food and they can actually produce more B vitamins. They can produce enzymes and things that help with bioavailability, digestibility. And then we'll get into fermentation here and then too.
Yes, I do want to talk about fermentation and learn some fun things, hopefully, about fermentation from you. But I just wanted to interject that, so I use the Animal Diet Formulator, and when you were talking about manganese, I was triggered. I was so triggered. I'm telling you that little bugger is every single time.
Ginger's a good source of ginger. Ginger's a good source of manganese. Yeah.
Yes, I have used that. Actually, I created some recipes for Dr. Katie Woodley's community, and that's what I ended up with ginger. Yes, especially with dogs that have a lot of sensitivities, and I'm just limited in what I can use. I'm like, every time that's what I wind up with. I'm like, how am I going to get manganese in this thing?
Well, that goes to mind when I'm thinking of struggling to get it all right. Yep.
Okay. So yes, fermentation. My dog so I adopted her at 2.5 years. She was pulled out of Mexico. I know she only ate kibble for the first 2.5 years of her life, but from the day I adopted her on, she only ate a raw food diet, commercially available raw food diet. Immediately when I switched her food, and I don't even remember the brand, doesn't matter what the brand was. It's a good brand. There's nothing wrong with the brand, but her ears, red, inflamed, itchy, immediately. And I'm like, well, crap. Now what do I do? And this was still pretty early on for me. Not in the idea of feeding fresh food. I had been feeding fresh food, but as far as like understanding nutrition and what's actually going on in my dog's body and why they need different things. And so for whatever reason, my brain, I got this light bulb and was like, I'm going to go buy some raw goat's milk. So I did that. And literally within 24 hours, her ears calmed down. So, raw goat's milk has been a staple of her diet ever since, but I know that going from that fermented food product to a non-fermented food product caused something in her body to say, no, thank you. And I still to this day don't really know why, because she does really well with non-fermented foods now. I don't, I do now that she's getting older. I feed her fermented beets for digestive enzymes, but for most of the past few years, she hasn't really had anything fermented. But I know that goat's milk has been helping her. And so I don't really understand what happened. I'm not a food scientist like you. But I know that something about that fermented food was obviously really beneficial, and her body didn't like it when I took it away. So fermentation is a big part of what Solutions does. And I would love to just hear from you, learn from you a little bit about why that is, why fermentation can be so beneficial for so many people and animals.
Yeah, absolutely. And, I think that, with my background being in cheese and dairy cultures, early on in my career, had that introduction to what these bacteria are capable of and how they evolve and how we evolve with them to really be part of our food system and be in our food. So it's something that, unfortunately, in the Western diet, with the advent of the Industrial Revolution, and we started to process food more and more, we, continuously degraded the level of live microorganisms and beneficial bacteria in our food. Unfortunately, as a trade-off for attacking pathogens, which, were making people sick, we couldn't find that happy medium. And there's so much history to fermentation. And if you dive into it, indigenous people and native cultures have been using it for millennia to preserve food. So it has such a long history of, we can be so confident in it because it does have such a long history of proving itself. But what a lot of people don't understand that, in addition to being sort of a food preservation technique, it actually helps us assimilate food and actually kind of pre-digest food for us and our companion animals. And that's what makes it, that's what I don't understand why more manufacturers aren't using it. I really don't. I mean, there's nothing proprietary about it. There's nothing patented on fermentation. This is something that's used in the food industry and has been for many, many, many years and has a good track record. So Jacqueline and I always said that to each other. We're like, why aren't more people doing this? Really not rocket science. It's pretty easy to do, and there's so much literature on it. If you go looking for it, it's out there, and you guys can do this at home so easily. And now with the advent of the internet and things like Etsy, and you can get your kombucha mother on Etsy. You can get your kefir grains on Etsy if you want to start. You can, just like they shared in the old days with the friendship bread, and if your neighbor would pass you their starter culture of friendship bread, which is basically, like a sourdough culture, and you would pass that on. That now with the advent of the internet, I was able to get kefir grains for my own home kefir from Poland, from a place in Poland. I thought it was really cool, Anyway, going back to that, the fermentation just to me is so conducive to raw pet food because we're trying to keep it raw, right? I mean, that as a commercial manufacturer who it has to play in the commercial arena of regulatory, to me, it made so much sense to, because we don't want a kill step, because a kill step pretty much neutralizes the benefits of being raw, right? They're kind of an oxymoron. If you do a kill step, you're processing the food to the point where it's really not raw anymore. So how do we keep it raw, and how do we deliver it safely, right? How do we take it through the supply chain knowing that pathogen not that grow? So we load it up with beneficial microorganisms. What's the easiest way to load up your recipe with beneficial microorganisms? Fermented foods, right? Fermented ingredients. So ferment your vegetables, your cultured milks, all of these different types of ingredients that are fermented. We ferment our ginger. We ferment cod liver. from livers. You know, a lot of people don't realize that you actually can ferment protein type foods. I mean, yes, the most conducive foods for fermentation are those high in starches and sugars, because that's what the bacteria like best. But there's many bacteria that can absolutely convert protein to sugars for themselves and ferment things like eggs and cod livers and things like that. So you can ferment those types of foods. A lot of people don't realize that. And what those microorganisms do is they're kind of their own little processing factories. You know, they're working on those ingredients, working on those nutrients in that food. And the benefits of it is it actually makes it more bioavailable and often better for us to consume it. So it actually can enhance the food and make it easier. And so that's why these dogs who struggle so much. So digestion, a lot of people don't realize, is a super high metabolic load on your body. In other words, like, that's where we spend some of the most of our calories and our energy, on digesting our food, and as well as our companion animals. So these carnivores, you know, if they're fed a non-species appropriate diet, like most kibbles are, they're organs and their body are working overtime to pull any kind of available nutrients out of that stuff to, you know, to assist in repair and growth and healing and immune support and all of that. So when you switch an animal to foods that are essentially pre-digested for them, because bacteria has already worked on it and is delivering a lot of digestive enzymes, also, you know, they're also seeding the gut with good bacteria. And then you're, you know, feeding whole foods on top of that, which is incredibly less taxing on the body for them. So that means that if digestion goes from here down here in your energy needs, look how much now that animal can spend on healing and repairing the body and getting into remission. So that's why we see animals do so much better when they go on raw foods, and particularly fermented foods, and goat milk. Goat milk is definitely at the top of the list for, because it is a reproductive food. It's what grows mammal, right? Any mammal starts its life with raw milk, right? No matter what mammalian species you are, you're starting your life with raw milk. So Mother Nature had to make it perfect. Right. If it's from a healthy animal, I'll do that caveat. If you're not going to get, my motto is you're not going to get healthy food from a sick animal. Right. So if you are pulling food from sick animals, and that's why back at the turn of the century, when they started pasteurizing milk, the cows were sick. The cows were very sick. Almond distillery dairies and things before we, and that's why people were getting tuberculosis. And then the milk was a vehicle for disease, and not a vehicle for health. So the animal has to be properly fed and healthy and low stress environment. And when you have all those things, then you get a perfect food from milk. And then fermentation, like I said, just add that extra, not only food safe. So when you have beneficial bacteria that you have in the particularly lactic acid bacteria, culturing a food, you know, there's only so much nutrients and space available in that particular, you know, you can look at it as a petri dish or however. So if you're flooding that with the beneficial bacteria that fermentation is responsible for, and a pathogen happens to be already in there or finds its way in there, it can't compete. It simply just can't compete. Try to liken it to, like, I guess if, you know, if you're in a giant ballroom, right? And yeah, it gets already filled to the brim with people. You know, you're just, there's only so many more you can fit in, right? Well, that's kind of what it is in food as well. And so the key components when you're using fermentation to combat pathogens is you've got to start with clean food. So the way it works best is you can't start with a heavily contaminated environment. So You're not maybe if you're starting with roadkill or something spoiled already or something putrid, you're not going to be able to ferment that and make a good food out of it. So, you know, you definitely have to start with fresh, clean food. And then that you've got the perfect medium there where you can inoculate that with your fermented ingredients or your starter cultures. And then it's got all the room to grow and have a happy environment. And then alpha hens just can't compete. So it's a great way to, in my opinion, offer raw foods that are really, you know, minimally processed, that hardly at all. You can keep the foods frozen. It's conducive to temperature abuse because if the meat warms up, we stack the deck is what we did. And we stacked the deck in favor of the beneficial microorganisms. And so they're already in the lead and you warm up the food and they're just going to take off even more. So that's what's so great about this intervention method.
I love that. And I appreciate the explanation. It's sometimes I wonder if I'm the only one that just like, am I dense and I don't get it? But I think it's because I just growing up, I wasn't exposed to a lot of different foods, certainly not fermented foods. And so even today, like my friends make fun of me all the time because I have a child's palate and I'm like, bleh, yeah, I don't want that.
Someone
right?
thinks the same way.
But you know, fortunately, our pets are generally a lot more forgiving, unless we're talking about cats. They're not very forgiving, but that's a whole other thing. And I don't want to shortchange any of the products that Solutions is offering, because I know that it is more than just a raw pet food company. I know that there are also a lot of different herbal blends that these are the kind of supplements I can get behind. I know, I have education and veterinarians that I'm fortunate to get to work with because of what I do, and a lot of support and knowledge because of that. And there are so many supplements on the market. It's not a very regulated place to be, whether it's human or pet supplements. And so when we look at like actual food, when we look at nature and what does nature give us for whatever it is we're needing, that's the kind of product that I like to get behind and that I like to recommend to people to research and look at. And so I know there are lots of different like herbal blends that she's doing as well. Do you want to add anything to that?
Well, I'll just add that, again, Chelsea is incredibly intelligent and she's done her homework and she has an incredible skill for blending herbs. She's a self-taught herbalist. She knows her stuff when it comes to blending these herbs and what to mix with what. I learned a lot from her because I'm not an herbalist. That's not my forte. So, but I'm a huge fan of it as far as using homeopathy and herbs and, whether they're Chinese herbs or Western herbs as a means of medicinal medicine. Yeah, absolutely. That would be my choice. So I'll give you an example. So Chelsea has a blend in her herb toolkit called Allergies. And that's an incredible blend for environmental allergies. She also has one called Immune. And I use that one on I got an actual anecdotal information on that because I use that on my own dog. I'm pretty sure that she came down with that mystery respiratory illness that was going around. I have two Malamutes and my younger female, she's 4. And this was about 3 or 4 months ago now. And at the end of winter, and she presented one morning with this awful cough, like just sounded like a sea lion. And I was really worried. I was like, wow, I didn't expect them pretty healthy dogs, you know, and I didn't expect her to come down with it. But she had this cough and she was having these coughing fits like every 2 hours. So immediately I decided to start her on Immune blend. And then I also fasted her on our chicken jiggles and our fish jiggles. So I reduced her food to maybe a third of what she normally got, and just fed her one little meat meal a day, and gave her basically three or four portion sizes throughout the day of the jiggles. And I put the immune blend in there. And I called my vet, Dr. Terry Sue. She's here in Eugene, a fabulous holistic vet. She uses the solutions products quite a bit to address the health conditions in her clients. And she's had very good success. So I told her what I was going to do. And she said, all right, let's give it 3 days. And if Suki, if her cough doesn't clear 3 days, I want to see her. This was on a Friday. And she said, you know, call me back on Monday and we'll get her in. And so I started Friday morning, and by Sunday evening, she was clear. She was clear of it, and no residual cough. Like Friday, her fits started to reduce. And then by Saturday, a little bit more. And I called Terry Sue back on Monday. I said, she's good. Like, I don't know if you need to see her. This is what I did. And it was two doses of the immune, one in the morning, one in the evening, in the bone broth jiggles, basically. And then just, you know, pretty much reduced her food to very small amounts so that her body can rest and just use the bone broth and work like a charm.
Everything happens on Friday, doesn't it?
Seems that way.
Oh, my goodness. Well, thank you so much for everything that you gave us today. It's so incredibly informative. And I know that we're blessed to be able to even have these thoughts and these conversations on doing better for our pets. I don't want to take that for granted because I know a lot of people aren't necessarily in that position yet to where they can start thinking further out and beyond and about what they're putting in the bowl. But I like to get these conversations going to put ideas in people's minds, to give them something to look for, to strive towards, goals to have. And also, you know, we can't expect people to do better without the education. Right, without knowing that there is better to be done.
I'm a perfect example of that. As far as I came out of school with a graduate degree in nutrition and food science, guess what I fed?
Cattle.
For many years. Yeah. So, yeah. You know, don't beat yourself up, guys. And don't beat your vet up, because veterinarians don't get this in school either. I was trained very conventionally, and although I'm blessed to have my education, and it's gotten me to where I am today for sure, understanding that basics of biochemistry and everything, I can apply it. But I really didn't have my epiphany, Jessica, till that year, 2009, and I was introduced to Weston A. Price Organization and learning about traditional foods and then the science behind traditional foods and why they work. And that's when my science background was really helpful to me. But I didn't come out with this knowledge. So yes, the education is extremely important. I had to be educated on this stuff just like everybody else.
Re-educated, right? That's how I see it.
Yeah, so I have re-educated on it, exactly.
Yeah. But right, so knowing better allows you to be able to do better. So I just appreciate you and the work you do, and you know, working with Chelsea to bring products like this to the market for pet parents. Where can people find solutions, pet products, and how can they get more information and education from the brand?
Yes, thank you. Yeah, the website is a plethora of information. So it has a great feeding calculator on it. It has blogs. It has publications, resources at solutionspetproducts.com. Very easy to find us. You can look at our collaborators, some of the holistic vets that we work with. And like I said, if it's something you have a burning question about, Chelsea and I will often write blogs on it. There's a blog available about fermented foods containing histamine. And, you know, if I should feed that to my pet that might have mast cell cancer, we address those things.
Okay.
You know, we pancreatitis and, you know, is a whole food diet with, you know, a substantial amount of fat still appropriate for my dog with pancreatitis? We address those things. Because they're all valid questions that, you know, oftentimes you get from your veterinarian of why they feel you shouldn't feed this type of diet. And this isn't things that we're not exposed to, that we don't understand. We dive right into them and we work with the holistic vets that understand this to get you the, you know, get you the solutions you need. No pun intended.
Well, thank you so much for being here and helping to educate more pet parents. Just appreciate you. Thank you so much.
Appreciate you too. Thank you. Yeah. Keep it going. Thanks so much.
Absolutely. Thank you so much for listening to today's episode. Make sure that you're following the show so you never miss an episode. And please take a moment to rate the show on your podcast app. I'd also love it if you'd share this podcast with your friends and family so that they can benefit from the information to help their pets live long, happy lives too. Don't forget to take advantage of this special discount as a listener today and get access to over 100 online videos and my online dog training, The Furry Family Coach. Just go to thefurryfamilycoach.com and use code PODCAST at checkout to get your first month for only $7. That's thefurryfamilycoach.com and use code PODCAST at checkout to get your first month for only $7. I can't wait to have you join and see you on the inside.